John Adams once said that the American Revolution was preceded by a revolution in the hearts of the people a generation or so before. The Great Awakening was a spiritual revival that helped convert so many in the American colonies, and the greatest speaker in the Great Awakening was George Whitefield from England, who came over on preaching tours, and in fact he went up and down the Atlantic coast. Now, what began in Northampton, Massachusetts, under the pulpit of Jonathan Edwards, began to spread like wildfire because of Whitefield all around the British colonies in North America. Dr. Stephen Mansfield is a best-selling author on historical topics, and one of his books is on George Whitefield, a man that most Americans, every American really, should get to know about. And he joins us now. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. Dr. Mansfield, it is always a pleasure to be talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be back with you. Thank you so much.
Sure. So for those not familiar with him, tell us about George Whitefield. And it's a shame that not everybody, American, knows who this man was.
Well, that's true. Excuse my voice. George, when I wrote my book, I titled it Forgotten Founding Father, because I believe that's true of George Whitefield. He's a founding father of America, but he's often forgotten. To put it in brief, he was born in 1714. He worked, his father died when he was two. He worked for his mother in an inn and eventually won a scholarship to Oxford. And during that time, he was converted dramatically under the Wesleys, who were there. And he went on to become perhaps the greatest evangelist of his age. He was part of the Wesleyan revival that was going on in England, but he led it and took it in a distinctly reformed Calvinistic direction. He was a magnificent preacher. The greatest actor in England at the time on British stage said that he would give all that he had to be able to say the word Mesopotamia the way that George Whitefield did. So he was very, very gifted, very powerful in his preaching. And he led England in revival at a time when England was only about 40 million, 10 million heard him preach. And so it was powerful. But it's what he did in the United States that was really amazing and of interest to me. He preached seven preaching missions from one end of the colonies to the other, initially from Georgia to Maine, and just dramatically led the colonies in revival, reconnection to Jesus, reconnection to national purpose. And there was hardly a family in the entire of the American colonies who didn't have someone in that family who was converted under George Whitefield's preaching.
I understand that he was not always welcome in some of the established churches, and so then he would end up preaching in fields or, you know, like in public squares or things like that.
That's correct. He, because he was a revivalist, because he engaged in much, as they called it at the time, enthusiasm, meaning that people would weep, you know, and be fall on their faces at his meetings and so on. Even the secular press talked about people falling out of trees who had been listening because they were so overcome. And perhaps the one newspaper even said the ground shook. And so the established church, excuse me again, my voice, the established church did not receive him. So George Whitefield began to preach in the open air. And this was an innovation at the time, and it dramatically allowed him to reach many, many, many huge crowds. In fact, when he preached in the American colonies, one of his biggest fans was Benjamin Franklin. And Franklin said that he walked the edge of how Whitefield could be heard in terms of the size of the crowd. And he estimated that Whitefield could speak to 75,000 people open air. Remember that this is at a time without without sound systems. So that's an astonishing range of voice. But Whitefield would be able to reach large crowds precisely because the established church did not let him preach in their buildings. And so it only increased his influence.
And as far as any kind of numbers in terms of, you know, let's say people joining the church again or becoming, you know, getting involved in the church, I mean, it's my understanding that there were lots and lots of people. He increased the numbers of church attendance in all the different colonies just about.
No, he absolutely did. There's no question about it. And one of the things that was great about him is that even though he was very distinct about his own Reformed Anglicanism, his own Calvinistic Anglicanism, he was quite devoted to the broader body of Christ. So it wasn't just Anglican churches that increased, for example, because of his preaching, but every kind of Bible-believing church, Presbyterian, Methodist, etc., they all increased in attendance and increased dramatically because Whitfield spoke so positively of those who were truly converted in every denomination. And that really, I think, improved and increased the impact that he had.
Now, you mentioned Ben Franklin. Didn't one of the services Ben Franklin helped his friend Whitfield? And that was interesting that they were friends because Ben Franklin sometimes is... I think John Eismel put it best. He described him as a secular Puritan. He had that Puritan background, but he didn't necessarily imbibe all of the theological aspects of it. And yet he helped promote, Whitfield's, ministry, even in terms of publications. And I wonder sometimes if maybe because Ben Franklin was a bit of a rebel and because, you know, Whitfield wasn't always accepted by the established churches, this was kind of like Franklin's way of, you know, poking them in the eye or something like that. But God used all these things.
Oh, there's no question about it. Benjamin Franklin was impressed with Whitfield as a speaker. He was impressed with how he was creating one of the things that we need to remember is that Whitfield was the first intercolonial event here in the American colonies. And so he was fashioning a national mentality. He was rallying the people to a national purpose. And Franklin saw this and cheered it on and thought the world of him and thought that he was actually helping to create an American culture, an American mindset. In fact, Franklin wanted to found new colonies with Franklin as the civil leader and Whitfield as the religious leader. So it's interesting that given that Franklin wasn't that devoted of a Christian, Dr. Eismo says it very well, the fact is that he recognized how faith, how revivalism, how the impact of the preaching of George Whitfield was helping to fashion America, and he wanted to extend that impact.
Now, along these lines, and this is an important point to realize, say before Whitfield's coming over for all these different preaching tours in America, coming over from England, the American colonies were really not united. Now, there were two factors that helped in the mid-1700s to unite the American colonies. One was the French and Indian War, and then the second was this, you know, the series of preaching in the Great Awakening. I've even heard that Whitfield may well have been the first human being that we know of that went into all 13 of the American colonies.
It's very possible, because if you had lived in the American colonies at that time, you would have felt greater connection to London than you would have to the other colonies. All of our colonies were British, all of them, but they were very diverse in terms of their theological background. Again, Maryland largely founded by Catholics, and Georgia, for example, largely founded by Anglicans, and Pennsylvania largely founded by Quakers. So all British, but not necessarily related to each other theologically and religiously, but also the great distances. This is a time when the roads are basically little muddy paths. Indians are about, thieves and other assaults. You know, you could be waylaid on the roads. And so the idea that someone from New York would make it to Georgia in their lifetime in the colonies was unthinkable. So George Whitfield may very well have been the first man to appear in all the colonies, but he reunited them. And this was both because he called for a national consciousness, an awareness of a national destiny, but also because he was this huge media event. And so the newspapers were tracking him. So you have people, for example, example, in Philadelphia. And what are they reading about? What's Mr. Whitfield, what's Reverend Whitfield doing in Georgia? Now what's he doing in the Carolinas? Now what is he doing in Virginia? So the whole country, all the populace is tracking Mr. Whitfield in the newspapers, and he is unifying them both in terms of his preaching and in terms of being a symbol of a national faith.
He stressed often that you must be born again. In fact, was once asked, why do you keep preaching you must be born again? And he answered, because you must.
He did not back away from the need to be born again. And by the way, he spoke often about the need for a converted clergy. So he recognized that part of the problem in the colonies was often that you had clergy themselves who were not converted. But he called everyone. At the end of his sermons, he used a standard phrase. He said, "You poor, undone sinners, come and be saved." This was the evangelical message that he preached. And he was unashamed in it. He would meet often with Quaker leaders, for example, and Catholic leaders, and he would press exactly the same challenge to them as he would with Presbyterians and Baptists and what have you. Are you born again? Do you know the Lord Jesus Christ? Have you believed on him? This was the way he spoke. And again, he was fierce and unapologetic.
Father Abraham, whom have you in heaven? Any Presbyterians? No, we don't know that term here. You know, well, do you have any Methodists? No, we don't know that term. That was one of his famous messages. And the main point was, you got to be Christian, but we should, you know, not, you know, put our denominational differences above our, you know, commitment to Jesus Christ. Any comments on that part of his preaching?
No, exactly. He knew that people were hiding behind their denominational names, their denominational signs. And he knew that many people, when he asked them about their spiritual state and their connection to Jesus, would say, well, I'm a Baptist, or I'm a Methodist, or I'm this or that. And he just decided to tear that down. He was very good at drama. He had wanted to be an actor before he was converted. And he was, again, amazing stage presence. And so he often did skits as part of his sermons. And the sermon you're citing was one of his skits. He would play all the roles. He would be Father Abraham, and then he would be the poor sinner trying to get into heaven, saying, hey, I'm a Baptist, I should get in. And he would play the roles, and people would just weep because they saw themselves in the dramas. Again, this is the fierce faith of George Whitefield. And even the founding fathers we know, you know, who crafted the Declaration and crafted the Constitution, they looked at him as one of the true founders, in large part because he called people to a vital faith that then formed into a national consciousness rather than just letting them sit in their sins in dead churches. That was his phrase, not mine. And so he had a profound effect upon our early history.
I understand that he, along with Ben Franklin, helped found the University of Pennsylvania. And yet, sadly, I saw a story about a year ago where the politically correct folk were saying, oh, we've got to have this statue of George Whitefield removed. Somehow, apparently, there had been a slave or some slaves or something in an orphanage he ran in Savannah. I don't know what that's all about, but your thoughts on that?
The truth is that George Whitefield did defend slavery. He was a man of his age. He didn't defend it broadly, but he thought slavery should be allowed in the colony of Georgia, which is where he lived and built and established an orphanage. So yes, he's offensive to many people today, but I think we have to have a little mercy. He lived at a time when slavery was alive and legal, and he treated the slaves very, very well. But this truth of his life has caused him to be maligned in our age.
Dr. Stephen Mansfield has been our guest. StephenMansfield.tv for more information. Dr. Mansfield, how about a 20-second concluding thought on George Whitefield?
George Whitefield, the greatest of our, one of the greatest of our founding fathers, much neglected, much maligned, but we would do well to spend greater attention to him. We pay greater attention to him today because we definitely need a new great awakening in our world and in our nation.
Dr. Mansfield, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Great to be with you, buddy. God bless.
You too. Bye-bye now.